Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1200. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning, 8:30 on Wall Street. Our economic indicators are brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer RIA that's ready to listen. Mm-hmm. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more. Here's Vinny Del Giudice at the First Word Desk. We have a boatload of economic indicators.
Michael, let's start with manufacturing. Durable goods orders up 3.4% in April, topping forecasts. However, a gauge of business investment down. Jobless claims, meantime, down by 10,000 last week to 268,000. Again, the durable goods report showing orders up 3.4% in April, the prior month revised higher. However, capital goods orders, a gauge of business investment, non-defense, ex-aircraft, down 0.8%. That's weaker than forecast. And then jobless claims, one more time, down by 10,000 to 268,000. Can't forget the labor market. At the Bloomberg First Word Desk, I'm Vinny Del Giudice. Let's go back to New York.
Well, we need the labor market because the durable goods orders headline is great, but the underlying number that the Fed wants to see is not. It looks like durable goods, a huge increase over what was forecast, but that was largely because of our good friends who split their time between Chicago and Seattle, Boeing. 65% increase in non-defense aircraft spending.
Well, the summary is markets move, yields in.
The capital goods non-defense ex-aircraft, which is, as Vinny said, the proxy for business investment, down 0.8%, and a three-month annualized basis, Tom, negative 8.7%. Consumers are spending. Business is not.
Yeah, and two-year yield comes in 0.93%. Yesterday, the day before, 0.89 right now, 0.89 in a solid 2 basis points off that. We'll see how that migrates. Other markets are pretty much status quo, but definitely the durable goods report moving the bond market as well, which leads to one of the most interesting things, which is the focus or narrowness of the hydrocarbon debacle on our aggregate American economy. Jason Schenker has made a cottage industry of this at Prestige Economics of plain talk about his Texas. The great Texan joins us now. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Well, I think I'm very good. How do you partition the oil and gas debacle within your macroeconomics, like durable goods or, for that matter, Fed policy? Is it discrete? Is it like the early 80s Midland debacle? What, how do you split apart or keep in oil and gas challenges?
Well, I think that's tough, and that is something that the Fed is dealing with. I mean, this is why the Fed, the FDIC, and the OCC issued very strong language on this in their Shared National Credits Review back in November. It's why at the Atlanta Fed Financial Markets Conference, Bill Dudley, the president of the New York Fed, was talking about increasing the liquid capital that banks would have on hand, which also slows the economy because you've got these bankruptcies that have been rolling in and are going to continue to roll in even if oil prices are around $50 or a little above that.
There's a question of timing. How much longer do we see the oil patch continue to subtract from growth in the U.S.?
It's going to be a while, Tom. So here's the thing. You know, the Shared National Credits Review back in November highlighted that oil and gas bad debt had increased almost 400% from November of 14 to November of 15. And on the day the warning was issued, the closing price of WTI was $45.20. And we spent 6 months below that. In the first quarter, we were 30% below that, and natural gas prices were 20% lower than they were on the day of that issue in the first quarter. But even now, okay, if we're around $50, you know, we're actually pretty close to the price levels when they did the analysis that led up to this warning announcement. So we're still just now for oil prices getting back to a giant red flag level. So, I mean, even just yesterday, every day you're seeing wire stories of major oil companies announcing major layoffs, announcing major cutbacks in capex, even now as prices are rising, because they're just now back to a level at which a lot of independents really can't survive.
I'm looking through the list here of durable goods spending, and it's interesting because you get a lot in airplanes, but the things like machinery down 1.9%. I mean, the companies just aren't spending, Jason.
You know, that's it. And I talk to a lot of different companies, not just oil and gas and not just here in Texas, but, you know, manufacturing, you know, very concerned. Transportation, you look at rail car loads, you look at trucking, you look at material handling. Any of those recent economic data points don't look so good. And I think right now, I think the linchpin that's holding the entire U.S. economy together, if we look at, you know, people talk about how strong the consumer is, but if you look at the year-over-year rates of retail sales, you know, those have slowed quite significantly. And if we look at retail sales excluding autos, those are near recessionary levels. And so it's really autos that are holding up the whole picture. And this is a really scary fact because auto subprime loans, right, are now in greater abundance than subprime mortgages. And if the Fed and the FDIC and the OCC have a mandate for banks to be a bit more conservative in some of their leveraged lending and lending in oil and gas, and you see the banks just become a little bit more diligent in how they're, you know, in terms of due diligence for consumer retail loans, you see a drop in issuance of new subprime. I'm not talking about subprime auto loans blowing up. I'm just saying let's see a reduction in issuance, and if you see this reduction, autos...
Okay, let's come back with Jason Schenker of Prestige Economics.
This hour of surveillance brought to you by Mount Kisco Volvo. Visit MountKiscoVolvo.com. Here's Michael Barr with news headlines.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. President Obama says foreign leaders have good reason to be rattled by Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee.
A lot of the proposals that he's made display either ignorance of world affairs or a cavalier attitude.
President Obama made the comment at a news conference in Japan today following the first working session of the G7 summit. A large tornado in rural northern Kansas stayed on the ground for more than an hour and a half. Kansas Highway Patrol spokesman Trooper Ben Gardner.
We have came across multiple homes, some that are slightly damaged to completely removed from the face of the earth and are no longer in existence.
The Kansas Highway Patrol says emergency crews are going by homes in the hardest hit part of Dickinson County, making sure no one is trapped. There are no reports of injuries or fatalities in last night's twister. Soldiers are placing nearly a quarter of a million U.S. flags at Arlington National Cemetery as part of a Memorial Day tradition. Today's Flags In marks the beginning of Memorial Day weekend observances at the cemetery. Global News, 24 hours a day. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom.
Thank you, Michael. Time now for the Land Rover Parsippany Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stasher.
All right, Mike. Toronto Blue Jays off to a slow start after winning the AL East last year, but their bats woke up a bit last night at the stadium, especially Russell Martin, who hit his first home run of the season, then hit another. Jays ended the Yankees' six-game win streak 8-4. The series ends 4 o'clock today. Alex Rodriguez comes off the disabled list. A-Rod homered last night for Double-A Trenton. The struggling Mark Teixeira expected to miss few more games with a stiff neck. Mets made it 5 of the last 6. They won 2-0 at Washington. David Wright's first inning homer, all that Steven Matz would need. Brilliant again in winning his 7th straight. Matz retired 16 in a row at one point. Mets say Matt Harvey, despite his struggles, will make his next start on Monday. Not much of an NBA game. Cleveland led by 18 in the first quarter, by 33 at the half. 116-78 over Toronto. Kevin Love, after two subpar games on the road, came home, scored 25 points. The LeBron James had 23. One more win and LeBron is in the NBA Finals for the sixth year in a row. Three times San Jose had lost in the NHL's West Finals. A couple years ago, they blew a 3-0 series lead. Sharks beat St. Louis 5-2, won the series 4-2, and they'll, in the final, face whoever wins tonight's game 7, Tampa Bay at Pittsburgh. Rafael Nadal up two sets at the French Open. He's won 9 times. The two Jet wideouts, Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, no-shows at off-season workouts, reportedly protesting that the Jets have not re-signed quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stachniak.
Oh, John, thanks so much. Mike, I went back and forth with Dr. L. Arian. He is in the, not the antipodes. What do you call the bottom of South America? The Patagonia? He's down there with like 8 penguins, and they're not in game 7 tonight. Good morning, Dr. Larian.
Good morning,
if you're listening in Chile.
Yes.
And I love this. I thought of Dr. Larian. Mike is out on Twitter saying he loves when I say stochastic. Dr. Larian's the only one that understands what I'm talking about.
What a great place to go fishing, too.
Stochastic is a very Game of Thrones kind of thing. Pointy. It's like the pointy end of the sword from Game of Thrones. Pointy. It's when a chart gets pointy. Is sometimes you get with strong dollar and you get a stochastic response, an abrupt move. Maybe we'll get that out of Brexit. This is Bloomberg Surveillance. We're stochastic.
The sports report was brought to you by Land Rover Parsippany. The spring sales event is happening now. Visit LandRoverParsippany.com. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by VanEck Vectors ETFs. Expect more from your munis. Target tax-exempt income by maturity and credit quality. All with low-cost ETFs. Visit VanEck.com/muni. VanEck. Access the opportunities. Orders for business equipment unexpectedly declined in April for a third straight month. Bookings for non-military capital goods, excluding aircraft, dropped 0.8% after a revised 0.1% March decrease. Jobless claims fell for a second week. Initial applications for unemployment benefits dropped by 10,000 to 268,000 in the week that ended May 21st. U.S. stock index futures remained higher following these reports, with S&P E-mini futures up 2.5 points, Dow E-mini futures up 33, NASDAQ E-mini futures up 6, the DAX in Germany's up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, the yield 1.85%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.1%, up 54 cents at $50.11 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $3.90 to $12.30.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1175, the yen 110.04, and Sears Holdings plans to consider options for its Kenmore, Craftsman, and Die Hard brands, as well as its Sears Home Services repair business, signaling that the unprofitable retailer may again be turning to asset sales to generate cash amid continued losses. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thank you so much. Michael McKee and Tom Keene, it is 848 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg View. Is Donald Trump the Republican Party's fault? After all, most Republican Party actors resisted the Trump takeover until, and in some cases even after, his nomination opponents dropped out. But the party nevertheless bears plenty of responsibility for the rise of the reality show star. Republicans had encouraged, or at least tolerated, Goulart taunts and far-fetched conspiracy talk long before Trump's campaign. Republicans had also already lowered the standards for their politicians. Several well-qualified Republican candidates ran in 2016, but Republican voters had been taught by their party to ignore normal qualifications, and they did so. And yes, Republicans have tolerated bigotry ever since Richard Nixon's Southern strategy, even if they avoided Trump's explicit version. Voters have all sorts of ideas. Only when politicians highlight those ideas do they escape from people's heads and become political issues. Neither Trump nor earlier Republican dog whistlers created the audience they played to. But there are many potential audiences in the electorate. Politicians and political parties choose which ones to nurture and are fairly held responsible for their choices. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more View, please go to BloombergView.com or View Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg View.
And Bloomberg View commentaries can be heard hourly weekdays on Bloomberg Radio. West Texas, $50, 7 cents, crisis over. Brent, $50.33. Gold up $4, $12.31 the ounce. which means it's a good time to speak with Jason Senker, author of Commodity Prices 101. Jason, you're teaching the graduate course, 502. It's an open book exam. What's the price of oil going to do?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to see, you know, and I've said the prices would rise higher because of the, you know, the impact of bankruptcies and cuts in CapEx. We've seen prices go higher now because of disruptions. I think that we could see, you know, prices go a little bit higher, but there are a number of factors that threaten to push prices lower. And, you know, one of those realities is we've had a disruption out of the Canadian oil sands. That's going to come off the books soon. That's 600,000 barrels a day of interrupted supply. You've got more supply coming out of Iran. You've got more supply coming out of Libya. So you've got a lot more supply coming out of the picture. And even though we've seen strong demand this year, you know, I think there's a chance we're going to be kind of in this range. We're actually below it as average prices through the balance of the year.
Well, this morning, the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe presented a case to his fellow Group of Seven leaders meeting that said, look, commodity prices have fallen by 55% between 2014 and 2016. That's similar to the margin by which they fell in 2008-2009. And therefore, he concluded, the world economy risks falling into a crisis on the scale of the 2008 Lehman shock. That was his word. Would you agree, or is he maybe just conflating a drop in oil prices with the drop that Lehman took?
You know, I think that the drop in oil prices is a real risk for the global economy, and there's risk for financials, which is why when Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, had an interview with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix last month, a week before the IMF released their new forecast at the beginning of April, she explicitly avoided answering the question if she was concerned about a recession twice in a 3.5-minute interview, and then instead deflected and said, well, you know, there are three things that we're looking about that are very disconcerting. And the first is the Chinese economy transition from manufacturing. The second thing is low commodity prices in oil. And the third thing, you know, are financials and sort of the risk to those. So these are the same. These are very similar things that have been on the Fed's mind. You know, if the IMF, when they released their growth forecast a week after that interview, in the press conference, one of the heads of research was asked, is the global economy in a crisis? And the very uninspiring response was, we are not technically in a crisis. We are on alert for a crisis. So, you know, these kinds of statements highlight that the IMF is clearly concerned and that, you know, the Fed, we know, is concerned because of the Shared National Credits Review and things they've said recently. You know, this is a potential real risk even at these prices.
Have you been surprised, Jason, at how the commodity implosion has fallen through to the overall economy and to central bank policy? I would suggest the IMF has actually paid a fair amount of attention to the global commodity implosion. You see that certainly in their financial stability book, the Green Book. Have central banks paid enough attention to the structural shock and awe of lower commodity prices?
Well, I think yes, and I think that, you know, there have been times they've paid a lot of attention when they were rising. I mean, I've seen Bernanke speak a number of times when he was the Fed chair at the Atlanta Fed Financial Markets Conference, and oil prices, you know, in 2011 and 12 and 13, those were things that were, you know, front and center on the mind. And now, you know, it looks like one of the bubbles of the 2010s has been shale, right? And if we look at, say, the job market in Texas, you know, the jobs went from, you know, roughly around 230,000 jobs in the space up to close to 320,000, and now we're back down to 230,000 since 2011 in oil and gas jobs. And so you've pretty much erased all of those job gains. So this, you know, this is something that I think they are paying attention to. I think it is important. There's been a lot of money that's been going in here. And on the metal side, something we haven't talked about, because copper is still not good, and there have been some weird things going on with ferrous scrap prices, which was Alan Greenspan's, one of his favorite leading economic.
Well, what do you see there?
Well, you know, I think it's a problem. It's a throughput proxy for the global economy, what's going on in China, right? And so these prices and the transition of what's going on in manufacturing in China is a big deal. You know, ferrous scrap prices rose at the end of March from about $250 a short ton up to $395 a short ton, and now they're back down to $260 a short ton. So you had this surge and a drop, and it looks like there's money cycling into the commodity space, and metals prices, which had risen in recent months in the spring, in the earlier part of the spring, they've now come back down quite a bit. And this happened in 2014 and 15, where metals prices came under a lot of pressure, but oil prices were supported by the driving season. And then, you know, it might take now a couple of months. There's also obviously the supply stuff going on, but there's downside risk to whatever happens to oil prices once we get past the driving season, because you have these other dynamics going on. Unless you see significant improvements in Chinese manufacturing, you know, you've got some downside risk. And those PMIs, the Chinese PMI that comes out next week, one of the most important indicators for not only industrial metals, but also for equity markets. If you look at the NASDAQ and the Dow, when you had really weak Chinese PMIs, you had one in August, you had one at the beginning of January. If you see weakness there, that sent equity markets lower. That also sent metals prices lower. That sets the cadence for a lot of markets. And I think that's a number I believe the Fed is watching. I think they're watching China very closely.
Jason, love having you on. Every time you're on, I learn something. Mike, I've never looked at ferrous scrap. Wasn't that a movie?
Yeah.
Ferrous scrap.
Ferrous scrap's day out.
I've never,
that
exactly.
Actually was on the Alan Greenspan list.
No, I know that.
Major indicators that he used to watch, because if scrap metal is rising, then people are junking cars and getting rid of old refrigerators and things like that. And that means they're buying new stuff.
Ferrous scrap. I'm going to have to look at, I'm going to email Alec Tanzi.
We do have, I think, something on the system about that.
You think that it's just me and Mike making it up, folks. We have a whole team of people who help us every day. I mean, down to obvious coffee and tea and tantrums. Oh, the coffee's not hot enough. To serious questions like, help me with ferrous scrap. One Alexander Tanzi in Washington is the keeper of ferrous scrap knowledge. We'll go to him and see what he can do. Good morning, everyone. Michael McKee and Tom Keene. Bloomberg surveillance with an interesting screen. I do want to mention the president's press conference in Japan was really something this morning. Thanks to our team in Japan who made that possible. Another hour now of Bloomberg surveillance.